Welcome to Worst Year Ever, a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not. Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
Fucking my the police. Obviously, what's fucking them is
America.
Yeah, a long history of bigoted law enforcement, violence, media that gives people unreasonable expectations and understandings of the efficacy of law enforcement investigations and the necessity of same structural inequalities. And of course, the desire of capital to protect itself using violence. Those are all the things that are fucking the. It's the worst
year
ever.
That was a really catchy intro.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. That's our slogan.
I'm going to set it
to song.
It's
long, but I think it gets it out there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I have it tattooed on my taint where I mm-hmm. put all true things.
That sounds painful.
It's extremely painful, Katie.
But the truth,
hurts.
The truth hurts.
Yeah, the truth hurts.
We did it.
We did. We really did great. How are y'all doing? In week two of the general uprising sort of thing, we're all, you know.
Massive civil unrest you speak of.
Yeah.
I'm feeling pretty hopeful and positive. I'm also exhausted, and I don't feel like, I feel guilty saying that, because that's nothing compared to what so many people are feeling, but that is the honest truth. It's a mixed bag of those things. And I say the exhausted thing though, because this is a marathon, not a sprint. Mm-hmm. There is a lot of work and sustained effort that needs to be maintained. And so we got to be able to be honest with ourselves and keep ourselves healthy for this, you know?
Yeah, I am after the first 9 days, I was out 8 nights for like 8 hours every night. And I'm taking a few nights off to write, because we have a new podcast series we're putting together about the history of the police. Like, it's this, as soon as I stopped, I started having like these like violent mood swings, like not violent towards people, but just like, I wound up leaving my house because I have a friend staying with me, and I just needed to like get annoyed at traffic and scream at people from inside my car. Because I didn't want to like be around. I didn't want to be like inflicting my personality on other people while I was like, and it's sort of like it's kind of the, when you take a shitload of aggression, and I'm sure a lot of people listening right now have been on the receiving end of extreme militarized aggression for the first time in their lives. Like when that happens, there's a point at which kind of like the anger you feel internally over that will generally bubble out. I'm not going to say that happens to everybody, but it's certainly like, this is not my first time dealing with this, and it does happen on the other end. So yeah, I'm just trying to like, I want to like, I'm very frustrated because I wasn't out last night, and one of my stringers, one of my team members, the journalist that I've been working with on the ground, got arrested for asking a police officer his name. And it's on video. Her press pass is visible the whole time. Like, all she's doing is filming an arrest, which she has a legal, constitutionally guaranteed right to do, and asks a police officer his name because he is, again, illegally covering his name. And he arrested her. Now, she just got a citation. We got her out, and we're going to fight the citation because they had no grounds to arrest her. And like today our police chief resigned, and I think the fact that like there was a shitload of violence against the press over the last couple of days, two of my colleagues got really fucked up. One of them was maced in the eyes and thrown to the ground. Another caught Portland police kneeling on a woman's neck while arresting her, which obviously is the kind of police violence that sparked a lot of this.
Jesus Christ.
And he started filming that, and the police shoved him back, knocked him down, and then beat him on the legs with sticks. And this was all filmed by a news helicopter. So it's like pretty cool.
I said this to you guys before we were recording, but it's wild to me. I guess it's not wild to me, not after everything we've been learning over the past many years, but couple weeks, is how some cities are just really doubling down on the fucking bad mistakes. I mean, the police specifically, whereas other cities they've withdrawn troops and they've taken a step back, and the peaceful protests have blossomed. And the violent looting has subsided, but other places like where you are, that is not so.
Yeah. And I have, Seattle. I mean, I have some strong feelings on kind of the way that these things are framed. For one thing, I don't consider looting to be
violent.
I don't
either.
Because property cannot experience violence.
Nobody could see me doing air quotes.
Nobody would.
I keep seeing people like frame it like looting and rioting. Like all these things are like together are evil. I don't think any of those people would call shoplifting evil.
No,
or violence.
An act of violence. No, and like even
looting
the fucking
is shoplifting, but the store is closed.
No, beating protesters is violent.
The fucking CEO of Target even came out and was like, I'm a billionaire. I could like literally pay for all the damage done to our stores and wouldn't notice it. Like it's like it's okay.
Yeah. I have Target stores in my pockets right now.
Yeah. Like it really is fine. Target will be all right.
Yes, I do. I do feel bad for small businesses that cannot recoup losses completely. That sucks.
Yeah.
But it's not violence. Okay.
It's not the same as, a young woman died because the police tear gassed her and it closed her lungs off. And if you've ever been in a tear gas cloud, that is the blinding and the pain sucks. But when your lungs close, especially if you're still, as I was in a couple of situations, like sprinting for a while without being able to breathe, like it's terrifying and disorienting. And sometimes people don't get to breathe again. Like, that's the reality of the fucking tear gas that our police
it's
have just
horrifying.
Been dousing streets in.
During a pandemic.
During a pandemic.
That affects your respiratory system.
Gotta love using chemical weapons that target your respiratory system during a pandemic for a disease that targets your respiratory system. Very responsible policing.
It is very cool and responsible.
It is wild to me also. I wouldn't know how violent the Portland police have been during this if it wasn't for you and the people on the ground with you, because the coverage of it on the news is not there.
Yeah, there's some element to which it's starting to be, but like our local news has been like drawing a separation between this crowd of demonstrators who chant peaceful protest repeatedly and all they do is march from one building across a bridge and hang out and talk for a while and then march back and nothing happens and it doesn't really even take any police resources. And this crowd that assembles in front, and what's been happening for nights is this crowd will assemble in front of the Justice Center. They will heckle and yell at the police. The police have pulled back mostly inside the Justice Center. Occasionally people will throw water bottles over. What happened the last night I was out was the police actually they announced that they had seen projectiles in the crowd, did not define what those projectiles were, and then began firing projectiles into the crowd. And once the police start shooting into the crowd, people start throwing water bottles back at them. And when the police got tired, they started firing heavier munitions into the crowd, and somebody threw a couple of fireworks into the police side to obscure their line of sight to make it harder for them to hit people with the projectile munitions, the rubber bullets and the foam bullets they were shooting into the crowd at random. And then the police were able to claim it was a violent protest because two officers got injured by a firework that was thrown at the officers after, again, officers were firing wildly into the crowd. It's very frustrating. But if your protest isn't exhausting the police, isn't costing them manpower, isn't running the department out of money, you're not doing anything. Is my opinion on the matter. If I was allowed to have an opinion as a journalist. Yeah, then it's just a parade. Yeah. Anyway.
You're allowed to have an opinion as a journalist. Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're in cool times as an America. I don't know. We're like right on the edge. There's so much like fucking tragedy and hope in the air right now because like you're hearing about, Minneapolis. When we'll be talking to someone from Minneapolis a little later. Like Minneapolis talking about just like removing their police department entirely. In Portland, we've even made some major changes. They've announced that they're like disbanding the gun violence task force and the gang crime task force, which like I think people who don't know much about law enforcement would be like, oh, but then there's going to be more gun crime. It's like, no, the gun crime task force causes more gun crime than it does prevent it. Like they shoot a lot of people.
Yeah.
Maybe we shouldn't have them. And they've removed Portland police officers from Portland schools, which is good. And you're seeing stuff like that in a number of American cities now. You know, Los Angeles is cutting what is, I would say, not a huge chunk of the overall police budget, because the LAPD budget is fucking outrageous.
It's a sliver, but it is a, it is a step.
It is literally anything.
And most, a lot of large cities, the police funding is as much as the funding for every other city service put together, if not much more. So while that, what is it, $150, $200 million, they're cutting out of the LAPD. Yeah, is not an enormous chunk of the LAPD budget. It's a huge chunk of the money that goes to other things that the city of LA provides.
Sure.
And it's a start. You know, we should trim, let's say, 100% of the LAPD's budget. But
Right.
I do think that progress has to be a take what you can get sort of thing. As long as it's not like, we got a little bit, now let's all start stop agitating. Like that's, if that is what happens, then it's a failure.
Well, that was a fear, but I don't see that happening.
Yeah, I mean it's early to tell, but yeah, yesterday Hollywood got like what 10,000 people marching through fucking Hollywood,
and and Saturday, I mean everywhere. I mean, over the weekend in Los Angeles, you could drive to every different neighborhood and find community action happening. You could find protests being organized. It's pretty inspiring.
Philly was enormous.
Yeah.
Even like, yeah, like little towns. I keep seeing, like I was saying before we started recording, I keep seeing people post like these small protests in like these smaller towns and like Texas and places and being like, I grew up in this town and it is fucking wild that people are protesting about this in that town.
Yeah.
And more and more things like that of like not just the massive places in these big cities, but just like these little pockets
smaller
where
communities,
you wouldn't expect that kind of upswell of support.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And today the House Democrats unveiled
took a knee.
They took a knee, but they also
wore
those sashes.
Oh my God.
There's a better word for them. I don't know.
They like culturally cloth, right? appropriated the shit out of some stuff. It was cool.
I mean, it was apparently planned by the Black Caucus, but that photo is oof.
Yeah.
But they unveiled a police reform bill that has some things in there that have been discussed. Defunding the police is not one of them. Also this, who knows what this will be received to in the Senate. But it just to show the different world we're living in after 2 weeks of sustained effort.
Yeah, actual like an actual effort.
I mean, I don't have faith
like,
in this
I remember,
bill.
I remember
I
like,
just
a week ago, there were all these reports of people trying to like get in contact with senators and Senate aides and like people in the House. Just like asking, like, what will happen in response to this protest? And this was like early on, and every single person scoffed at the idea. Like, there's nothing. What? Like, no, we're not gonna. There's nothing. There's no actions gonna be taken like this. And so, whatever your opinion is on what what the actual legislation is, or whether or not it will pass, a few days later they tried to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And like other stuff, like one of the great things that started to happen is like there's these like Richmond is one city and Charlottesville is another where they have these like fucking statues of Confederates that are starting to get removed now just because and this didn't just start with George Floyd's death. I know activists there who have been fighting to get these things removed for years now.
Yeah, it's been a discussion like for so long. Yeah. It feels like every conversation about it is just on repeat.
Yeah, it's just sort of, but this was kind of like a rising tides lift all boats thing. And so, and that's not a meaningless change. That's not just a cosmetic change. Like, it is cosmetic in that it's a physical thing that's being removed. But the lack of a presence of statues commemorating fucking traitorous slaveholders in American cities is meaningful. It's meaningful to the black people who live in those cities, and it's also meaningful in kind of the message that it sends Americans, and particularly young Americans who grow up around that. It's meaningful that the Marine Corps is banning the use of the Confederate flag, and that the Army's considering renaming bases named after Confederate leaders, which they never should have had bases named after Confederate leaders.
Mm-hmm.
But all of this is fucking part of it. You know, it's meaningful yeah. that a fucking crowd in Bristol threw the statue of that Coulson guy, that slaveholder who like built the city.
It's incredible.
Threw it in the fucking river. Like they didn't wait to have the government say they could remove it. It was just like,
right,
no, we're just gonna take it down and throw it in the fucking river.
Like, and like a lot of these statues were also like erected after like in response to the civil rights movement. A huge fuck you to people.
Yeah, as a we're still in charge black people thing.
Yeah, like look at our statues. Also, sorry, speaking of dumping the statue in the river, some guys are trying to fish it out of the river today.
They're trying to fish it out with like one of those sticks you use to clean out a swimming pool.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's one of the best things that's ever happened.
A lot of visual metaphors out there lately.
Yeah. And it like all of this, all of the things that are changing around the country, all of like the like it's the kind of thing we're not going to get. I can tell you already, like it is not going to suddenly like sweep Trump physically out of the White House and abolish all of the police departments. I would be all on board for that if it were. But that's still not the America we live in. But we do now live in an America where a hell of a lot, for one thing, I think probably a million or two more people have either been directly assaulted by the police or who have had a loved one directly assaulted by the police.
Yes.
And that's going to change how some people vote. And we like the window, we'll talk about this in our interview a little later, but kind of like the window of debate on what is appropriate for us to have in terms of police has shifted massively over the last 9 days in a way that I would have thought impossible 10 days ago, 11 days ago.
I tweeted this. I mean, people, we've talked about this. Everybody's been talking about it. You know, a few weeks ago, I wanted police reform. I thought most cops are pretty bad, but you'd be hard pressed to get me saying all cops are bastards. Not true anymore. Absolutely not true. And that, and even more so, I don't know anybody else who wouldn't be willing to say that. I actually do. I know people. But for the most part, I'm really heartened by the shift I've seen just across the board from people in my circles, you know, centrists that are staunchly ACAB.
You guys have mentioned America a lot, but it's not just America doing this. I mean, even with
that's what the Bristol thing was. Yeah, it's
Bristol
international
thing and the French rioting on our
Belgium,
behalf. Thank you, France.
Belgium taking down those Greece. King Leopold statues, which is bad. Yeah.
Well, they're covering it. Have they taken them down yet? I know that they've been protesting
them,
but I think they're still up.
And there's some that have been like fully like chopped.
That's been nice to see.
Yeah.
And they're
statues
like,
of King Leopold.
All the Churchill stuff.
Yeah, people fucking with Churchill statues.
Responding like, but he's not Hitler.
Yeah. Yes, you're right. He was half of a Hitler. And at the time, that was better than a Hitler, but it doesn't mean we should have statues to him still.
Half a Hitler's not good.
Yeah.
There's a lot of that shift I see everywhere, every day, more and more. Like parents of like conservative parents, even of friends of mine who were like, I didn't realize this. And people like responding online, even just being like, I used to really support police unions and police, like all these like booster stuff. And I will never, ever vote for increasing funding for police again in my life.
Oh, I've got a good one. you guys have heard me mention before. Probably. I have a friend that my best friend from high school, we grew apart. She's very conservative now, voted for Trump. Her husband is a Trump supporter and that we don't communicate very often anymore. But her husband started liking all of my Black Lives Matter posts and the defund the police posts.
What?
I know.
You didn't tell me that. Oh, wow.
Just started happening.
That's wild, folks. Knowing who she's
talking
about.
That's a huge cultural shift.
Yeah.
It's time for an ad, I think, is what we're getting to.
Yes.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not. Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
That was a nice break.
That was a nice break.
Woo. Golly. Like,
Minneapolis is going to get a nice break from having Minneapolis police.
Ayo.
Yeah.
We are
although Seattle isn't going to have a nice break from getting tear gassed.
No, they're not.
Despite the promise of a 30-day break from getting tear gassed, yeah. They broke that promise on day two. So
yeah, it's funny. The police, like the phrase that keeps cropping up that I love because it's brilliant, is tear gas lighting. It's we've been having that in Portland too. Where like three nights ago, the mayor came out, Mayor Ted Wheeler, who is also the police commissioner and thus directly responsible for all the violence everyone's been receiving, came out to like talk to the community and like speak with a number of local Black and Hispanic activists in like the middle of this huge crowd of thousands. And everybody just told him what a piece of shit he was. And, like, there was no respect. There was no attempt at, like, it was just like, no, fuck you. We want you out. Stop using tear gas. And he committed to not use the sound cannon, which was breaking people's ears. And then he was like, and I'll tell them tomorrow not to use tear gas. So of course, that night, they gassed the shit out of us.
Of course. Well, I'm glad
we can laugh about it.
Yeah. Oh,
God.
It was nice.
Yeah. It's a nice little break.
You have had, I will say, watching Ted Wheeler get shouted at by the entire town, like literally thousands of people, like this huge crowd of thousands arrived while he was already surrounded by like 1,000 people. And he got so scared and like tried to leave immediately. And like the activists he was talking to was like, are you scared of the people of your town, Ted? Mm. Like we've all been getting shot at by your police for the last week. Like, why are you scared? Yeah. Like, what are you worried is going
on? Oh, that's so good.
I like the next day, Mayor Frey of Minneapolis, who like made a big show of crying at George Floyd's memorial, went out directly into a crowd to speak to them and was asked if he supported defunding the Minneapolis police and said no. And everybody said, fuck off. Like this whole crowd, I get up now. Like the New York Times described it as like a moment of public shaming. That was almost like incomprehensible. It's the kind of beautiful thing you'd only see
you
in like a movie or a TV show. Yeah,
it's impossibly written. You'd be like, "Well, tone it down, guys." You'd be like that's it's it's bizarre. It's so wild to see.
I'm gonna admit, watching Wheeler get shouted down like that, I was a little bit hard. Like that was a nice moment.
There are a lot of like cummable moments.
So that's your kink, Robert. Okay.
Yeah, I'm into bear shaming.
The Zoom calls are amazing. Yeah. Those conversations. I keep thinking about like, imagine if Pete were mayor of South Bend right now. Yeah. Like, what is
response? Oh my god. Tear gas Pete. Yeah.
On the lines of the tear gas lighting, it's really interesting because this is all like we bring up like Ferguson time period during all of this because it's all like intensified echoes of what we saw during that. And this is the same kind of thing about tear gas, but I also you keep seeing police accounts sharing these tables of items. And it's heartening to me to see people look at those tables of items that like protesters threw, you know, and just everybody going, fuck you. This is bullshit. Yeah.
Robert,
mm-hmm.
You mentioned already that we are speaking with somebody from Minneapolis later in the episode.
We sure are.
Should we give our listeners a little bit of a rundown of what's happening there just in case they don't know?
Yeah, I mean, so the people of Minneapolis revolted against their police department after the murder of George Floyd. They laid siege to the 3rd Precinct and eventually, mm-hmm. through sheer weight of numbers and running the police out of munitions, forced the police to withdraw. And then they fucking burnt the precinct down.
I mean,
the National Guard and other police have been called in. And so, like, some areas of Minneapolis have, like, you know, are being essentially policed by everything but the Minneapolis PD. But chunks of the city are kind of letting them be for the most part because, like, they made their feelings on being policed pretty clear. And there's kind of a, like, it was announced, I think, yesterday the news dropped, so, like, Sunday, that a veto-proof majority of the Minneapolis City Council was going to be disbanding the Minneapolis police and kind of replacing it with something new, a public safety council or something like that. I don't think we know exactly how they're still trying to figure out like what that looks like.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of an acknowledgement from the elected leaders that, like, we can't reform the Minneapolis police.
Yeah.
We have to get rid of them. And, like, obviously there's jobs that they do that are necessary. Like, there's people who investigate murder.
Mm-hmm.
Murders should be investigated. But we can't fix this. It has to be replaced.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's incredibly exciting.
Yeah. It's a good move. And, you know, you're seeing an increasing a lot of, you know, a sizable chunk of the activists in Portland are demanding Portland police be disbanded. I'm not sure. I haven't seen, you know, there's, I think, a larger movement for kind of completely disbanding the police than there has been, but that's still a pretty fringe political statement nationwide. But I think a sizable chunk of Americans agree with reforming or reducing their funding. So I do think you're going to see, like, again, kind of different steps taken in different areas, but Minneapolis is going to be kind of on the forefront of experimenting. Like, what if we just tried something totally different? So that it's going to be of the stories to continue to be watching in the next year or two, really, and more. Minneapolis is I think a really important one to keep an eye on.
Yeah, because also even just in talking about it, that changes public opinion and perception,
right,
like
of what's possible.
Yeah, and it just like simple things like, okay, in this situation, it wouldn't be a police officer, it would be this. So even before you see the effect of it, I think people will open up to it more because when you hear about it, it makes sense.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm a police abolitionist. I think we need to figure out something else. But I'm also like, okay, well, if this police department cuts their staff by 30%, this by 25%, and they remove these weapons and like, that's better than nothing, and I'm not going to stop pushing for police abolition, but if I can have 30% fewer police and have them be less heavily armed while I'm pushing to get rid of the rest of them, that strikes me as an acceptable tactic, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And I have seen people push back on because of they easily conflate abolition with defunding and these other plans, out of, like, this weird fear that, like, well, they do this, and then they'll do the abolishment and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, even the that mayor who got shamed, Frey, he was asked, will you commit to defunding the police? But his answer was, I do not believe in fully abolishing the police.
Mm-hmm.
Which isn't an answer to the question that she asked. So there's a... Yeah, I don't know. It's just interesting how people view both of those things and where one will lead, but using the abolition possibility as an excuse to say that we shouldn't do things that everyone agrees are good.
Yeah. I don't know, yeah. Y'all. I wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, one of the things that's kind of worrying to me is sort of there is this element of kind of co-opting some of these protests. You saw there's these photos,
yes,
going around of like one of the guys leading some who's not leading, but he just kind of like stumbled into the front of one of these marches in New York City, dressed like a Black Panther with a megaphone, but also, yeah, like super chummy, putting his arm around the police inspector.
Oh,
who,
yeah,
was like,
yeah,
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 yeah. And he like turns out he's like an Instagram model and stuff, who's not even from New York, hasn't lived there long, is just kind of trying to co-opt. And we've had something like that in Portland too. This is,
yeah, got that beret
a couple of cities,
like a week ago. Yeah,
yeah. We had like this chunk of. And again, one of the problems is that when you're looking at these massive marches, they're not organized usually by like a strict hierarchy. Like there's just sort of an activist community, and it's like, oh, we have people who know how to be the folks on bikes who make sure that the group stays together and who scout ahead. We have folks, mm-hmm, who know how to be medics. We have folks who know how to like be in the middle of the group to stop it from panicking if they get gassed and to like help keep people together. We have folks who know how to like lead chants and folks who know how to like help, you know, keep thousands of people together as they march through a city. And everybody just kind of does their job. But because the people who really know what they're doing are kind of doing their job and watching out for the police, you can have sometimes people just sort of like start chanting in the front and get on a bullhorn and kind of try to make themselves into figureheads of the movement. And we had this happen in Portland recently, too, where like these folks that nobody really knew got in front and started kind of co-opting the march and doing weird stuff like refusing to try to push past a police barrier when they had the numbers to do it without asking anyone what they wanted to do. And it turns out later that like one of those, the initial folks who was like trying to become the face of this movement in Portland, was a convicted pedophile who'd raped a 5-year-old, and who had just gotten out of jail, and was a model and trying to, and he was a young Black guy. He was a model and was trying to like reinvent himself this way. And it's like a lot of shady stuff happening. People with like that nobody knows who are kind of like one of the things that's been happening is the kind of activist communities have been trying to like make sure that they're putting people of color up front and center, which is good and important. And a lot of really good activists around the country right now are you know, people of color who are kind of dominating and leading this movement in a way that's really important. But it's also the fact that like they're trying to put new voices up front means that like people that folks haven't known as well are winding up in the front of some of these movements. And
right.
some of these people are like take like shady as shit. Right.
Right.
And it's this problem when you're putting a bunch of new voices up front is that some of them are going to be working with the fucking cops. Right.
Yep.
Like that's the situation. Because it's profitable sometimes to work with the cops. And because I think a lot of them think that they can make a bunch of money out of this once kind of the revolutionary fervor dies down. And I think that's a worry that, everybody of all groups who cares about really making meaningful change needs to be concerned about. It's like if you see someone at the front of one of these groups, for one thing, like I don't trust the phrase peaceful protests because peaceful protests never accomplished anything. I think nonviolent protest is important. Right. I don't think peaceful protest has any fucking value.
Yeah, it's an oxymoron.
Yeah, I think
those words don't go together.
A non-peaceful but nonviolent protest doesn't have to be looting and burning downtown, although I'm not going to say that's never an effective strategy for a movement to pursue. But it does need to be, you know, I do think a valid option is draining the resources and the time
right.
and the manpower of the police and exhausting them and making them hate their jobs and making them feel unwelcome
yeah.
and kind of mentally abusing the cops a little bit to get them to quit. I think that's a valuable, I think making them realize, I think a big part of why a number of folks become police is because it's been traditionally a respected job. So I do think that if we're talking about a diversity of tactics, one tactic in reducing the number of police is making them hate their job.
Yes, absolutely.
In addition to cutting their funding so they make less money and that there are fewer of them, you know.
I mean, yeah, it's changing the way we perceive them. If this job is not perceived as high status, then it will not attract the same bullies.
Yeah,
right,
exactly.
or the ability to have that authority.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I think we've kind of gotten through all of the stuff I wanted to talk about at this stage before we lead into our interview with One Voice from Minneapolis. And yeah.
Yeah, well, that's perfectly timed with our next ad break. So, well done,
God.
Robert.
Oh, thank you.
I love ads.
Fucking
you know,
pro.
In all of this chaos, the one thing that's never changed for me is my love and appreciation of products and services.
Mm-hmm. Raytheon, proud sponsor of the Black Lives Matter protests.
Raytheon has never tear gassed anybody. Sure, they've helped launch a few thousand missiles at a few thousand weddings. Obviously.
But yes. What have they done here with tear gas? Huh?
Exactly. No tear
Absolutely
gas.
Absolutely nothing.
Exactly.
So support Raytheon in its quest to make sure that every newlywed couple gets a Hellfire missile. directly into their family. That is the beautiful dream of Raytheon. And that's the beautiful dream of this podcast.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not. Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
Podcast.
The
well, we probably will record the intro to the show separately.
Nope. This is all staying in.
That
Katie.
Was it.
This we
Welcome.
Just introduced the show. This is worst year ever. The podcast
host.
Where
we don't run a very tight ship, but neither does America. So
no, but you know, Katie. Fun fact: this is actually not a ship. It is a podcast. So
what?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
What?
You
Why
have
am
been
I
trimming
so
sails for a year for no reason.
I've been throwing up everywhere.
I'm so sorry. We
no
don't
wonder
even
the
Dramamine
doesn't work. Yeah. Okay. Well,
that fun introduction was our way of getting everybody in with a laugh because I'm sure like
Welcome
about
back
40%
to Port Starboard and Center
have been tear gassed since the last episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're talking about the uprising, nationwide against the police. And today we have a guest from the epicenter of this uprising, Minneapolis, Minnesota. Carl, how are you doing today?
Doing great. It's, you know, just another day in a new world.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you mean by a new world?
Well, you know, since we watched that murder, things here just so quickly fell apart and have turned into something completely new that it's, you know, it's something I never thought I would see in my life, let alone have in my face the very real possibility that we're going to get rid of our police force. You know, like all over the city, the community's turned into something that I never, as much as this city is different in a lot of ways in that community vibe, it's never been like this. You know, we essentially have taken over a large city and demanded that it changes fundamentally how we do what we do and go about our daily lives. And we're not gonna sit and take platitudes or hollow gestures anymore. It's our world now. So we have this whole mentality that anything's up for grabs. And we're seeing that day by day, new things, new attitudes, new views on what we want. And yeah, it's totally unique. I've never in my life experienced anything that felt simultaneously like a candlelight vigil, a powerful moment of anger and sadness that's had decades of building behind it, and this other sense of just like hope. Mm-hmm. And that sense of hope, I think, is something that, if nothing else, is one of the more truly uplifting things I've ever seen. And it beats out any of the corporate manufactured stuff we've ever seen that's supposed to be quote unquote uplifting. And it's really in your face representation of what it looks like, I think, when communities had enough and is willing to say, you know what? I think it's time for a radical change, even if that scares the hell out of everyone but us.
Yeah.
And you know, Minneapolis has seen a number of protests in the not too distant future against the police, as a result of the police and
absolutely,
fact, yeah, killing black people. What was the moment, if there was a moment, when you were like, oh, this one's different. This isn't just going to be people hanging out around a precinct with signs until they get tired.
Yeah. So, you know, it's funny. I was thinking about this and I was looking back because I've been trying to really keep a running journal and kind of a day-by-day calendar of both the pandemic when that started and now the uprisings that we're facing. And, you know, I was looking in the Tuesday. So Monday night, that video kind of went live and people here started really, there was talk. by Tuesday, though, I had gone for a hike at the river, which is right near the precinct. And, you know, by the time I got home at about 5 that night on Tuesday, I was driving home. I drove down Hiawatha and was stopped by probably 500 protesters.
Wow.
And it was everybody. It wasn't just BLM activists. It was members of the Southside community that live there. It was members of different groups that have come out for different events, whether it's like the city council, people from the Powderhorn area, where, you know, in like the Cup Foods area at 38th. Any, you know, these different groups kind of started to coalesce. And that was maybe 3 blocks from the precinct and was kind of, you know, the beginning of this thing. And by, you know, by 8 that night, about 4 or 5 hours later, it was something already different. The police were, you could hear it. Like I was listening to police scanners. I have friends listening to police scanners and you could hear it was different. The cops sounded overwhelmed. I think that's the best, the best I can put it. And, you know, from there on in, you know, it was only a matter of time until the precinct fell. And, you know, by the time the cops scattered out of their gated in little parking lot, the whole area had already turned into, the closest thing I can say, it looked like the Maidan. Everything I've ever seen from Ukraine, you know, this felt like that. You know, by by the time the news really started picking up that wasn't Unicorn Riot or some of the more personal like level blogs, it was already so, you know, people were, the anger was so out in the forefront. There was just no way it was going to stop. And that was the moment I really knew that we were somewhere totally new. You know, like we've seen protests, like you said here, we've seen really tense conflicts between the police and the community. But this, by that point, was so far beyond anything we had ever experienced that, you know, the minute that first rampart got built and they started calling it the Battle of Lake, Lake and Minnehaha, or the Battle of the Target, you know, jokingly, it was already a thing. And that's when I knew.
Yeah. And you're now living essentially in, not entirely post-police, but certainly post-Minneapolis police in your
area. Definitely post-Minneapolis police. You know, like I said, today's the first day I've seen a cop, and it wasn't a Minneapolis cop. And and that's 2 weeks now, almost. We're 2 weeks. And, you know, that, it's so weird because it's just, it's normal. There's no outside, okay, and I should say normal in the context of the right-wing invasion that's going on simultaneously on the ground, which isn't being talked about really, but there's that element that's kind of, it really confuses this other situation we're dealing with.
Well, can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah,
the right wing.
Yeah, so like in the midst of the initial uprising, when the precinct was burning, when people were kind of commandeering goods from all over to help either protesters or to build barricade walls, there was also this other side that was starting to be kind of noticed both on social media, and the police were hinting at it, kind of, and. You know, it's been hard with them because they don't say very much, but we also know what we've seen, which is that a huge group of kind of unidentified, I mean, they're saying KKK. The reality is it seems more like an insurgency force built of a couple different groups. Mm-hmm. And they're on the ground, and it's a very strange thing that's happened here. You know, day one after the actual outbreak of looting and rioting and burning here, there was an influx people noticed kind of happening of cars that we noticed without license plates. And it sounds really innocuous, but it's strange. You notice that in a city like Minneapolis, for some reason, it just started happening. And so, you know, by the time Friday night that the National Guard was being kind of called out, you know, they were reporting kind of openly that there were groups of people causing problems. The president, everyone else has lied through their fucking teeth and said it was Antifa. But the reality is we had Boogie Boys on the ground. So we had the Boogaloo Boys were here for sure.
For sure. Yes. We have pictures of them. We have them talking about it.
I watched them in person. We also have, though, a couple other groups that I am still trying to figure out who they are, and I have photos of some of them, but they were all foreign nationals. The two that we confronted directly said they were Dutch and had out-of-date Dutch press passes. A lot of the guys that have been caught here have been caught with either some sort of media badge or something that would approximate one.
A lot of people don't know about media badges, but most journalists, you just print them. Like, you just print them, right? Like, there's nothing, like, there's not, like, a centralized authority that issues your media badges. Some cities
Maybe New York City or LA, where they have press offices. Yeah, correct. And that's the thing. And so, you know, when you confront someone who you see driving a car with no license plates and full of people, and they stop the car in the middle of the street, get out and confront you as to why you're taking photos, you know, stuff's going on. And, you know, I've spent a lot of my 20s and early 30s studying and reading up on just anything that kind of approximates what that looks like, whether it's fascist kind of revolutionary stuff to how the spread of propaganda works and how that looks. And these guys were the spookiest group of people I've ever encountered in real life. And when you have that element, and there are public, you know, everyone on your social media sphere is kind of saying, well, we're finding, let's say, jars of accelerants around town in bushes, or we're finding rags soaked in gas. I mean, for example, my neighborhood has one business in it, and it's a LGBTQ-owned coffee shop. Two nights after the actual fires in the main area stopped, it was lit on fire by someone running down the street. You know, like, there's stuff that's happening. And I think it's a story that's going to come out more fully as time passes, but it's one that I think is important and extremely integral to whatever the pushback that we're going to see looks like. I think, you know, I think we have to be honest with ourselves that the right is actually going to probably look more and more like an insurgency force like this, where it's guys driving trucks, shooting randomly, lighting things on fire, leaving KKK-style notes. I mean, truly, like, leaving notes in neighborhoods that say, we're watching you. We're going to burn you. We're going to burn you alive. I mean, you have a very odd element mixed into this whole other revolutionary no police thing. Is we're self-policing in the midst of what looks to be an insurgency campaign. So there are these, like, very odd things going on.
And this isn't just happening. I mean, Minneapolis, y'all are the epicenter of this. But yesterday in Seattle, somebody tried to drive into a crowd and then shot into the crowd.
Exactly.
Somebody.
And he was a confirmed KKK member, I believe.
Correct. Well, there was definitely one that was confirmed. I don't know where it was from.
Because there have been like 20 different cars that have driven in.
Correct.
Wild. Yeah,
and several of them have also shot. Cop
cars. Okay, so at least one of them confirmed KKK.
Correct. KKK leader. Like, not just some low-level guy. Leader. So, I mean, I think we need to... This is something I've been thinking about for a long time. I think we all have been. But there has to be a conversation about what that is. Because that looks a lot more like a far-right Middle Eastern terrorist campaign than a traditional American conversation.
Interesting that Antifa is the one that they want to designate as a terrorist organization.
But that's standard operating procedure for misinformation. You know, like, we're seeing the worst of the worst when it comes to just outright manipulation of reality. And I think, you know, a lot of us know what we're looking at, and a lot of people are starting to, but I think this whole thing that we're witnessing, the uprising, the response, is cracking, I think, the neoliberal shell a little bit in a way that I know for myself, I never thought I would live to see the day that the shell shook.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
one of the most remarkable things of the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, it does.
It's unbelievable.
We kind of seem to be on the edge of everything. Like, there's so much good and bad news every day. Like, just today, like, the police chief in Portland resigned after a bunch of police brutality. Bennett, the guy in the New York Times editorial board who let Senator Tom Cotton write about murdering everybody who's protesting, that guy had to leave.
Yeah.
You have Minneapolis with a veto-proof majority of the city council, like, you know, trying to put an end to the Minneapolis Police Department. At the same time, you've got Seattle police using tear gas two nights in a row after the mayor put in a moratorium on the use of tear gas.
I was going to say, I believe they didn't because they said they wouldn't, right? Like, that's how this works now. We didn't do it because we said we didn't. Don't believe your what you saw.
Yeah. And what the Portland police has done is like, no, when we said tear gas, we just meant the CS. We can still use the OC tear gas because it's like that was the problem, is the type of the flavor of gas was the.
Yeah, they're really splitting hairs on, like, the kinds of irritants they're allowed to use.
Yeah. I think that's the game now, is split the hairs as far as you can, because otherwise they've already lost control of the narrative. For the first time ever, I don't think anyone in any position of power has a response to this that isn't going to look either contrived or racist. And that's a very strange place to be for everyone who's used to being able to get in on something and say, hey, well, maybe we can do something that's performative. As we saw with, like, Chuck and Nancy this morning, that shit doesn't fly anymore. None of us hair. It just doesn't work. It looks cringy as fuck.
That's exactly what I said. Yeah.
And that's the reality. Different. Like, that's the thing that we see. We're calling it as it is now. And I think that that's a hard thing for people to manage. I have never seen the right be this quiet because they can't manage the perception part of this. And that social engineering part is integral outside of the racist part of things for them, their survival. And I don't know how anyone has a pushback mechanism against a popular uprising.
Yeah. I mean, we saw Mitt Romney at a Black Lives Matter march yesterday.
Yeah.
Correct.
I mean, even like when you have everyone not only saying like defund the police and things like that, and being able to explain it I hear so many stories of people explaining that concept to their family members who are pretty conservative, and they say like, and then it made sense to them. Because it makes sense.
No, and
so
that's
you have
it.
All these people talking about this. And then, like, today, Scott Walker tweeted, like, defund the police or police reform? I go with police reform. And it's like, okay, so, like, that's the bare minimum now.
Correct. Yeah. And that's, that's the thing.
Where, like, the right is like, oh, my God, we got to do something. Police reform.
The window moved so far left so fast. Like, I have whiplash. You know, like, I think most of us were kind of worried that we were going to kind of march off a cliff blindly into some weird fascist twilight zone, because we kind of had been. And now it's just like, bare minimum is reform at such a massive level. I don't think you can call them reform. And the other direction is no, please. We're going to figure out a better way, because there is a better way. And I think what's interesting about all of this, and has struck me since the beginning of the real transformation during the kind of protests into this movement, is people really are willing to put in a lot of hard work to build something that works for and reflects their community. And I think that that's going to be, you know, that kind of thing, we're never going to be able to go back. Like, conversations can't go back.
Yeah.
Just because the gravity of this has pulled in so much more. And it's unbelievable.
And so I'm kind of a little curious, you know, one of the things that made me want to get you on here, we were talking for a little bit sort of when I was trying to get to Minneapolis before Portland broke out in riots.
Yeah,
And in the week since, or in the week and a half, however long it's fucking been since,
years,
a lifetime, a lifetime, a lifetime.
You've started taking part in armed patrols of your neighborhood, and I wanted you to talk a little bit more about that, about like why y'all are doing that, and kind of what sort of purpose you think that's going to serve as things move forward.
Well, so I live right in the city, essentially. Yeah. Like, when the military was here, we're right outside what they called the footprint, which I have feelings about, but that's a different conversation. And, you know, realistically, we didn't get messed with tons outside of that time I said, where we had someone run up and light a building on fire. You know, outside of that, we haven't had many issues. We've had people creeping around. We've had weird stuff, but the community here started that on Thursday night, I want to say, after things got really heated. They had organized already probably like 15 or 20 people, and then it increased and increased again. And so there were a number of people, and it wasn't armed at that point. And then it switched over to where a couple people were definitely ready to go, and things kind of progressed from there. And now, because things have calmed down, we just were kind of reevaluating. So it's interesting. Up north of here, north Minneapolis, that's a wholly different thing. What they're doing up there is, I think, magic. They've figured out, I think, how to do a nice balance of both with the community policing, because they got, I mean, they were bombed. That's the best way I can describe it. The two nights after the majority of the action in the city and at the precinct, they were attacked by these right-wing extremists. And really what happened up there is they decided, the cops aren't coming. There's no one here to protect us but ourselves. And they've really organized something that I think is a model to export. You know, what I'm doing here and what's happened here where I am is, I think, more of an experiment that started based on a much more peaceful model. And because it's offensive, it's different. You know, it's just such a different concept now that you even are having a conversation like this where we're talking about just people in the public patrolling or watching who are ready to go into action to stop someone from doing something bad. And they're willing to put themselves on the line. It was a strange time. You know, we had armed National Guards that would come out in convoys of 30 or 40 troops at a time, plus Humvees, plus support vehicles. So you have that, but then you have armed citizens basically at night all night for a few nights during the major parts of the concerning time right after that, when we were being told there were white supremacists running around and there were random shootings every night. I mean, it's become something that feels normal now, but like, that's 10 days. I think this is a really easy thing for a lot of people to understand when they're in that moment. But when you've never been faced with the situation that your neighbors, who are way more at risk than you'll ever be, are being threatened by people who really have no problem hurting them, it changes the whole dynamic. You know, like for me, it was a simple, why wouldn't I?
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many things. I think a lot of people are going to say, well, you know, that's extreme or something like that. And I think what I'm realizing is, yeah, it looks extreme, but it looks way less extreme than watching someone get choked to death on the ground for 8 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And frankly, my neighborhood is sweet. And the neighborhoods who adopt this, I think we're going to start to see great numbers when it comes to drops in crime. Frankly, like when you talk to people who have been here as long as I have in different parts of the city, they've already said that they don't have issues like they used to, whether it's because the police were causing them or whether it's because people respect a community that takes care of itself. That's to be seen.
Sure.
But it's an interesting thing. And when you invest in your community and its safety, I think people are less likely to screw off because they don't think, you know, they feel like they're getting something over on friends versus getting something over on the man.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing. Like that shift alone is, I mean, unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like I want to be able to say more, but there's really, it's just such a shocking and abrupt change. It feels like it went from being a military, like, dictatorship on the ground because our police really just are dicks, as we all have seen. But to being something that's just so different, but it doesn't feel any less safe. You know, like, your day just doesn't feel different. You don't get parking tickets. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, you know, there are things like that, but like, it's weird. Like, it's just subtle stuff, but you notice it where you're just like, oh, okay, cool.
Now, does this feel like something that is sustainable?
Absolutely. I think, you know, I think the question isn't whether it's sustainable. It's whether the system that we live in can sustain us. And that's what we're seeing. Like right now, I think there are going to be major questions that come from this about universal basic income, about giving people the dignity to just live a friggin' life.
Yeah. Especially if they're doing that kind of stuff for the community.
Correct. Exactly.
How do you compensate it? How do you make, what's the trade-off here?
Well, and how do you give people some just a chance?
Yeah.
Like, that's all we're asking for. I think that's all anyone wants is a chance. And I think that's going to become more, you know, there's an economic component to this social movement and revolution that is going to become more and more, I think, important in the conversation about longevity, but also about what it is actually that's built the systems we're talking about.
Yeah.
So there's a lot going on here.
Yeah.
And you hear it on the street, you know, like those first couple nights you heard people saying out loud, COVID may kill me. I'm broke. What else do we have left to do?
Yeah. And what do we have to lose here?
Exactly.
This shit has to change.
Well, we have everything to gain. Like, look at what we've done. Look at what we've done in 2 weeks. I mean, at this point, Pandora has opened a box that's between the pandemic shifting all of the social norms and this, it's a new world.
Yeah.
And I think people are just realizing that.
Yeah.
Because I mean, hell, we've been living in such a weird thing. This just shifted the whole thing again. It's just, it's bizarre.
Yeah, it's very similar.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I, you know, like, normally I would try and make some kind of clever, well-reasoned answer. I don't think there is one. I think we're living through something that is literally so fluid that none of my guesses matter, really. I don't think any of us know what tomorrow brings. And I'm, yeah. I'm totally cool with that. It's the first time, I think, in any of our lives where we can say, you know what? It's all up in the air. It could go any direction.
Yeah, and it's kind of up to everyone continuing to be active to stop, you know, at some point.
Absolutely.
The street protests will die down, and there's a chance that they'll die down for just a few weeks, and then the police will murder somebody else and they'll crop right. up again. But it's this has to be a long haul, you know, like the Montgomery bus boycott lasted over a year, you know, like
yeah.
we're talking.
Correct. Like, this is a long-term project now.
Yeah. And I think what we'll probably see, obviously we're seeing Minneapolis starting to experiment with, like, oh, what if we just get rid of our police department? I hope we'll see at least a couple of other, like, I hope we'll see that in Portland. I hope we'll see at least a few other cities attempt something like that in the next 6 months. And I think we will get reforms in other places. And I hope that the examples of the places who do get rid of their police departments will lead to that happening more often. Like, I don't, we're not going to have, this isn't a situation where we're going to have, like, the entire order overturned overnight. It's just not going to happen.
No.
The momentum's
no.
not there. The weaponry's not there. Like, whatever. But
well,
I
and
think,
in reality, I don't think you could pull that off here. Like, there's just
no consensus
way to
on what's
it.
Needed.
Yeah.
yeah.
Exactly.
But I think there is consensus that policing needs to change. And I
yes.
think there's a growing support for the idea that, like, maybe we don't need cops in the sense that cops have existed for all of our lives.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. I think that's yeah. absolutely on the head. You know, I think that people are just ready to try, you know, like the American experiment, man. Like, this is our experiment. Let's try some cool, bold things.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. So let's all try some cool, bold things is a good good note to end on.
Yeah.
Carl, do you have anything you want to direct our audience towards in terms of donations, in terms of
you know,
support?
I think
you got an LP you want to plug?
No, I actually, you know, I really don't. You know, I'm on Twitter. I'm trying to figure out how to kind of get some other things going. I'm going to probably try and get together my thoughts on how propaganda has affected the arguments that we're seeing now being brought forward. And I may try and turn that into something, but that's kind of in the planning phases. But you can find me at Brain Not On Yet on Twitter. And, you know, I'm just kind of here right now.
All right. Well, okay. That's great. I think yeah. we've got us an interview here.
All right, that does it for us today, guys. Thank you for listening. And you know
thank
what?
Thank you for listening.
You can check us out online at Worst Year Pod, Instagram, Twitter. That's it. Those are the options.
Those
do
are
it,
the only
do
options.
It, do it. Do
anything
it, do
else
it, do
you
it.
Do is forbidden. Mm-hmm.
And we will find out.
I tried. Yes. Daniel?
Lovely.
Worst Year Ever is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.